Joining us now, it's After Six. We've got an author with an unusual book. There's all kinds of stuff on nutrition and how food impacts our lives and our health. And I've never heard this idea presented before. And that is that how our predecessors ate, how our ancestors ate, impacts our health. Joining us to talk about her book, You Are What Your Grandparents Ate. Joining us now is Judith Finlayson. Hi, Judith. Thanks for being here. Welcome to WTIC.
My pleasure.
So what is this all about, this concept? Tell us where its roots are and why you're writing about it.
Well, basically, the key message here is that your health does not begin or end with you. And this is something that we know now through two main areas of science. One is epidemiology, and that's the study of disease patterns in large groups of people. The epidemiologist who did the basic work in this was working in the 1980s, and his name was David Barker, and he published his findings initially in the British medical journal, The Lancet, in 1986. He was looking at heart disease, or he noticed in doing epidemiological studies of Britain that heart disease was more prevalent in the poorer areas of the country.
Mm-hmm. And that the poverty connected to diet?
Yes, it connected to diet, but it connected, he discovered, really the key was through low birth weight. When he got access to other various bodies of data, he was able to link it to low birth weight, which is also linked to high rates of infant mortality and also maternal mortality. But
finding that kind of connection sounds fairly routine, but how does that extrapolate out into your life being affected? Is low birth weight, are those kinds of differences so huge in terms of how your health for life is?
Low birth weight is a key marker for metabolic diseases like heart disease, stroke, diabetes, obesity. And it's something now that medical scientists are beginning to look at. Now, low birth weight is a technical term that defines 5.5 pounds or less.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, it's not like if you're, 7 pounds instead of 9 or something
right,
like
right.
that.
Right. You're talking about something that's dramatically different from a normal baby. And it would make sense, I guess, that there would be health differences that would come along. But I think we probably assume that if you are getting good medical care from birth on, that the low birth weight would not be such a big deal, that those would be mitigated by the healthcare system.
That to some extent is true. So low birth weight on a grand scale is really linked with poverty and less ideal social circumstances.
Okay, so the fact that it's happening to people in those circumstances means that there's less likelihood that modern science is going to mitigate those problems.
Unless you nip the social circumstances.
Right, which is less likely to happen, right?
Well, yes, it's not a kind of easy fix. But let me give you a couple of examples and then we can get off on how this actually happens. Around the time that Dr. Barker was working, a Swedish epidemiologist named Lars Bergen was working. And he was looking at, and I'd love to know, I have not spoken with him, but I'd love to know how he got the idea for this. He grew up in a little town in northern Sweden where they had feast and famine agriculture. And he took a look at the difference between children who grew up in periods of feast and periods of famine. And he found that young boys who ate too much around the time of puberty were more likely to have grandsons that died young, He also found in later studies that women who lived through a period of famine when they were pregnant significantly increased the possibility that their granddaughters would die earlier than normal.
Isn't that fascinating? What year about was...
He was working in the 1982.
Okay, so they were able to crunch data using computers at that point. I mean, this is the kind of thing that's easy to discover in the computer age.
Absolutely.
But I would imagine 50 years ago or 100 years ago was much harder to do.
I think you're absolutely right. But I want to go back and give you some insight into kind of how this happens, and it brings us back to your health not beginning with you.
Okay.
And it comes to the second branch of science that really got involved in this and that started giving some answers to how this was actually happening. The epidemiologists were able to show statistically what was happening. And then when the science of epigenetics came on the scene, really around the turn of the millennium, they began to be able to answer some of the questions about how it was happening. So what you need to know is that, as you know, your genes are fixed. So, you know, nothing is going to change in your genome.
But I don't understand this. I read this in your material supporting your book, and it says that it's an expression of the genes, what the environment does. But that doesn't really help me understand. If genes are fixed, why aren't the results of those genes fixed? Why are they altered by environment?
Well, because your genes react to things like nutrition or toxins or stress. Your genes are your genes, but your genes are not static. They operate in response to environmental impacts like poor nutrition. And those impacts leave marks on cells that are known as epigenetic modifications.
Okay, so the cells are modified in some negative way by negative environmental impacts, which doesn't change the genes but changes the nature of the cells.
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
So let's go back to Lars Bergen and his grandsons who died young because they ate too much. How did that happen? They have found similar things with a propensity to obesity and diabetes in young boys who smoked around the time of puberty. That's the time when the male reproductive cells are forming, and those environmental impacts, like eating too much or smoking, leave these epigenetic marks on sperm cells, which are transmitted through the generations.
Oh, okay, so there's a really clear way that how your grandparents ate,
yes,
would be impacting the future generations.
Yes, and where you really see it is in girls. So remember, what we tend to forget is that a female baby is born with all of her eggs. That means that those eggs were forming while her mother was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And so her mother's experience while she is pregnant dramatically affect the quality of her daughter's eggs. So my health can be directly linked to my grandmother through my mother's eggs. So if a grandmother is poorly nourished or endures chronic stress or trauma
during pregnancy,
those experiences leave epigenetic marks on the eggs, which are transmitted through the generations.
Okay, this is fascinating. We're talking with Judith Finlayson. Her book is about the results of how your grandparents ate. That impacts your health. You are what your grandparents ate. What you need to know about nutrition, experience, epigenetics, and the origins of chronic disease is her book. And this is an intriguing conversation because it gives us a different perspective on the importance of everybody understanding basic things about nutrition, and especially today where we see obesity, for example, lots of kids around the age of 11, 12, 13 who are shockingly overweight. And you're suggesting that could be creating an epidemic for 30 years from now.
Yes, and one of the problems that people have been looking at is the impact of the standard American diet over three generations. We have been eating too much nutrient-dense or nutrient-poor, calorie-dense food in processed foods, and this is having an impact, as we discussed, on what we transmit to our descendants. You know that the lifespan for the last few years of Americans, of North Americans, has been declining. And the opiate crisis, no doubt, is playing a role in this. People have discussed that. But it started to decline before the effects of the opiate crisis were really being felt.
So you're saying this is the roots of it?
Yes.
That we're starting to see now, and that is that grandparents of those people dying were not eating well, but the grandparents of people dying young today. So I'm 65. My grandfather was born in, I don't know, 1890, say my father's father. And it sounds weird to say that. It's so long ago, but that's long before we got into the processed food era, isn't it?
Well, it is, but you're also beginning to see, say, people who were born maybe in the 1950s started to eat processed foods, had children in the 70s. Their children had children, say, in the early millennium. So mm-hmm. you can see the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, we're starting to move in a different direction because of this
genetic
trend.
Exactly. One of the things I might talk to you about, which is interesting, is an area of the southeastern United States known as the Stroke Belt. And I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's intrigued epidemiologists since the 1930s because the vulnerability to stroke seems firmly rooted in birth and early life. When people move, they take their stroke risk with them.
Oh, interesting.
The area, when people have looked at it, it's characterized by high rates of poverty and disruption that really began in the Civil War. And David Barker, the epidemiologist that I talked about initially, who did the original work in this field,
right,
was very interested in the stroke belt because he really saw that the long-term effects of poor nutrition were taking a toll on women's bodies, and that this was having an intergenerational effect on physical impairments. If you also kind of look, I've taken a look, and the rates of maternal mortality and also infant mortality are higher in most of those areas.
And where is this?
In the Stroke Belt. So
which is what?
Southeastern United States. It's about 11 states, like South Carolina, Louisiana, Alabama, Missouri, where the incidence of stroke is much higher.
But you're talking about a big chunk of the Deep South, which we think of as being impoverished and maybe not getting the best medical care as a result. Is that why?
Yes.
Okay.
So poorly, really, what David Barker was looking at was nourishment. And it's because women who are poorly nourished themselves can't meet the demands of a developing fetus. If you don't have enough nutrients, the fetus isn't going to get the nutrients.
But that's just amazing where we're talking about the same socioeconomic group, I think, the same demographic that also is dealing with obesity. Is it possible that we are eating such bad foods that we are getting fat and malnourished at the same time?
Yes, absolutely. And the epidemiological studies that David Barker and his colleagues looked at, and they looked at three major sets of data, one from Britain, one from Holland. You may have heard of the Dutch hunger winter.
No.
Where in the Second World War, the Germans closed off the railways so that in northern Holland they didn't have enough food. People were starving. That's when they were eating tulip bulbs and so on. And those women gave birth to children who had significantly higher rates of obesity, heart disease, and type 2 diabetes. The third set of data, just to conclude that, is in Finland, and it's called the Helsinki Birth Cohort. And that's an interesting set of data because not only could it link it to things that happened in pregnancy, but it could also link metabolic diseases to how children grew, because they not only followed women who were pregnant and through the first year, which the other studies did, they followed the children right up till age 11. So they could begin to look at different patterns in how children grew. So one of the things that you really need to watch in childhood growth is body mass index. And if children grow too quickly, i.e. gain too much weight, mm-hmm. And were born with a low birth rate, that increases the risk for hypertension. and if they gain weight too rapidly, especially males, then that is linked with diabetes, heart disease, etc.
Fascinating. We're talking with Judith Finlayson. Her book is You Are What Your Grandparents Ate, and she's telling us the details of research that have prompted her analysis in her book about how we aren't eating well in certain places or certain periods of time, despite the fact that we have so much food, which is a dramatic new experience, I think, for humans. We have just 3 minutes or so left, so I want to give you a chance to kind of bring this around to something that meaningful for us. And you just touched on the idea that there are, just becoming aware of this could cause people to act in ways that would be beneficial. Is that something you could focus on too?
Yes, absolutely. And we can get into the fact that we know that things like exercise and healthy diets benefit, improve gene expression, but we don't even really have to go that far. You can just say by adapting a healthy lifestyle, and particularly for pregnant, when women are pregnant,
what would women focus on the most?
Pardon me?
What would a pregnant woman want to focus on the most?
Well, high density or nutrient dense whole foods, and don't eat processed foods.
So does that mean that if routinely the average American I read has pizza like 3 times a week, is that all by itself bad, or is that an indicator of people not being conscious enough of really that we should be eating a lot of fruit and vegetables and proteins and less carbs?
Well, I don't even know if I'd go as far as less carbs. It's whole foods that we should be eating. And the problem, when we were talking about the three generations of processed foods, really the problem with that is that we are now seeing in North America people who are suffering from what they're terming high-calorie malnutrition. So you're getting too many calories and not enough nutrients. And the way to address that is going back to basic, real food, whole foods.
So you're talking about things that haven't gone through a machine. You're talking about avoiding all those middle aisles of the grocery store,
yes,
and shopping where the meat and fish and vegetables are.
It's not rocket science.
Yes. Well, it is in terms of the difficulty people have of changing the patterns in their lives. And I think the less sophisticated you are, the less educated, the less financially secure you are, all those stresses and pushback against the attempt to change habits is even bigger.
That's absolutely correct. So it's not, you know, a simple, straightforward solution. It's a complex one. But the key message is, you know, eat the perimeter in the supermarket, as nutritionists will tell you. Don't get into the packaged food.
All right. This is fascinating. Judith Finlayson, thank you for taking the time to fill us in. You are what your grandparents ate, what you need to know about nutrition, experience, epigenetics, and the origins of chronic disease. It's been great talking with you. Thanks for taking the time.
My pleasure.